It's time for This Week in the Big East, a comprehensive look at the teams, coaches, players, and the storied tradition of the Big East Conference. Here are your hosts, longtime conference play-by-play announcer John Rook and Big East author and sports writer Kevin McNamara.
Welcome to This Week in the Big East. It's our weekly look at the teams, the coaches, players, and stories from the schools in the Big East Conference with Kevin McNamara. I'm John Rook. Congratulations to the UConn Huskies. They've clinched their first regular season title in the Big East since 1999 this past week, which was also the year they won their first national championship. We still have a full Saturday slate of games to play before getting to the Garden next week. Some spots in the bracket are already clinched, but this could be some kind of finish down the stretch with not just Big East seeding, but NCAA tournament spots on the line in almost every case. Kev, you probably couldn't really drum this up much better for the fans, but how about for the coaches right now?
Well, first of all, we have to congratulate Dan Hurley and his team for the regular season championship. It was such a big deal. Well, certainly with Coach Hurley, I saw some social media posts afterwards, John. He was mixing with the students on campus, having a little fun, and totally legitimate. All the best to the Huskies here in March and their attempt to repeat as national champs. But I know Dan has always really valued the regular season championship, as any coach does.
How about the pressure then on the coach this week, especially for, you know, places, I guess, 2 through 11 in the Big East Conference, in trying to jockey for position to see if they can't get considered for postseason play?
Anyone who can take down Connecticut, not only is it an outstanding win, I think it'll help you in seeding for the NCAA tournament. And I think we're going to get to that right now.
Yeah. So here's what we know heading into the final weekend of the regular season. UConn's carrying the crown for an 11th time in school history, matches the most ever in the Big East. Butler, Georgetown, and DePaul will be playing in a Wednesday night opening round. Second through ninth place still kind of up for grabs pending Saturday's play, which also means that the muddied middle of the Big East could get a little murkier before the NCAA selection committee makes its picks on Sunday. St. John's, we know, streaking. They've won 4 in a row. Seton Hall will be the 4 seed in the tournament. Villanova and Providence can both further their cases for the postseason with closing wins. So many possibilities, Kev, still to go.
Yeah, John, let's pretend we're at one of those New York City, you know, speakeasies around the corner from the Garden. And you know what the guys are going to be talking about before they walk into the Big East tournament? What does Seton Hall need to do to get in? What do the Friars need to do to get in? Well, we'll talk about it right now. Seton Hall has 12 wins in the Big East. They've beaten Connecticut. They have assorted wins against the top teams in the league. I know that their net is, for some ridiculous reason, 60, you know, low 60s. John, I have a hard time believing the Pirates won't find a way into the tournament. That's A.
Agreed.
I like St. John's' ability. I think they're going to end up with 11 Big East wins and streaking at the end. Providence probably has some work to do, depending on what happens with their game against Connecticut. And, hey, any team in the Big East that can take down a UConn, a Creighton, even a Marquette without Kolek, that is a major gold star for the NCAA selection committee to consider.
And then, of course, you could simply just go and win the Big East tournament next week, and then pressure is all off in the worry department, right?
That's the yellow brick road to a bid, right?
No question. Of course, that's also a lot easier said than done, as we mentioned. All right, let's take a look at this week's Big East headlines. Connecticut clinched their first regular season title in 25 years with a big win over Seton Hall last week. Marquette played the week without the defending player of the year, Tyler Kolek, in the lineup, out with an oblique strain. Creighton caught and could pass the Golden Eagles for second. Seton Hall is just a game back of those two after a home win over Villanova. That snapped an 8-game losing streak to the Wildcats. The Big East this week had its top 3 teams all within the top 10 in the Associated Press Top 25 and coaches Top 25 polls. UConn is number 2, Marquette is 8th, Creighton moved to 10th in both polls. The outstanding individual performances continue to spice up play between contenders and gain some national recognition. Marquette's Tyler Kolek is one of 5 finalists for the Bob Cousy Award as the nation's top point guard, along with UConn's Tristan Newton. Creighton's Baylor Shireman is a finalist for the Julius Irving Award. Ryan Kalkbrenner, Providence's Devin Carter, also mentioned prominently among the country's top defenders. Looking in on the net rankings and KenPom metrics, Kevin McNamara's favorite subjects, they've been fairly steady for Big East teams over the past month. 9 teams still remain in the top 67 of the net at midweek. 5 in the top 34. 9 of 11 teams are ranked in the KenPom top 66. and six of those in the top 50. And a reminder from what we mentioned a week ago, since 2014, 41 of 44 teams that finished above 500 in league play have reached the NCAA tournament. Eight teams were 500 or better in league play at the start of the week. And Kevin, if you've lost count of the ultimate measuring stick while matching these blind resume games, you know, that you see on TV, Connecticut has 10 quad one wins. Purdue leads the nation with 11. Marquette has 8. Creighton has 7. Seton Hall has 6. Providence and St. John's have 5. Villanova has 4, which might make their Saturday home game with Creighton somewhat important.
Well, the good news, John, is the members of the NCAA selection committee are not blind. They've been watching games. They may be blind because they've been watching games nonstop for 4 months, like you and I. And if you see a team like Seton Hall, like St. John's, like Villanova and Providence, they will definitely be in the mix, heavily, heavily discussed come Selection Sunday and leading up to Selection Sunday. And as far as the highest level, we know Connecticut will be a 1. I think Creighton can work its way to the 2 line, 3 at the worst. Marquette's going to be interesting, John. You know, obviously no Tyler Kolek. If he does not play in the Big East tournament, which is possible, how do you seed Marquette? It's going to be interesting.
Thanks to our Westwood One affiliate radio station for joining us. Thank you for catching us on SiriusXM. If you're listening on your favorite pod site, please subscribe, rate, and give us a review. We're found on all of the pod platforms. And for more on the podcast, including back editions, you can visit the website, www.twitby.buzzsprout.com. And you can always listen right online, westwoodonesports.com and on Big East. Inside episode 9, we'll get some insight from one of the top players in the conference this season, a candidate for player of the year who has shown game in and game out that it's not just about scoring points, but also about not giving them up. Providence's true two-way threat, Devin Carter, will join us. Also coming up, we'll hear from Big East Commissioner Val Ackerman with a State of the League report and what she found surprising about the play on the floor this year. And when you know you're going to be good, sometimes the burden becomes heavy to wear, but not necessarily at Creighton, as the Blue Jays prepare for a postseason push. Head coach Greg McDermott joins us next. This Week in the Big East.
Coming up this week in the Big East Spotlight. Big East Spotlight.
Baylor wraparound pass into the corner. Mason for 3. Yes, sir! And a backslap from Mack. Jays back up by 21. Timeout. And Greg McDermott says, get on your feet.
Welcome back to This Week in the Big East. You know, living up to expectations is never an easy thing to do, of course. Some handle that better than others, and at a place like Creighton, expectations are always high because the program is always successful. And when you have great expectations at the start to a season, and the Blue Jays were thought to be a championship contender, how you handle those expectations along the way can certainly help determine ultimate success. Creighton head coach Greg McDermott joins us this week in the Big East. Greg, you knew you'd have a team capable of winning a lot of games this year, but did you see things at all in this team initially that maybe we, as in media and fans, didn't?
You know, to start with, to live up to those expectations, you have to have good players. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, we do. We had a really good core back in Trey Alexander, Baylor Shireman, and Ryan Kalkbrenner. You know, what we did know is, you know, how well we're our young power forward position, how that was going to play out. And then secondly, you know, how long was it going to take for Steven Ashworth really to kind of grow into the position to replace Ryan Nemhart and run the team. Certainly had some bumps in November and December, but as time has gone on, I think this team has really gelled. You know, you learn a lot from the experience last year. You're on the doorstep of the Final Four and you don't quite get it done by one possession. I think there's a lot of education that took place going through that process for Trey and Ryan and Baylor, and they've used that as they've led this team this season.
I think your fans were obviously heartbroken with the way the season ended last year, and to bring back, you know, the core of your team for sure. It's so rare in college basketball. I would imagine that is a focus, you know, to take that next step. Do you use that as fuel?
Yes, without question. And you know, you as coaches, and I think players sometimes think it's coach speak when you talk about the value of one possession. Any one possession can dictate an outcome of a game. And, you know, here we are in a national stage trying to get to the Final Four, and it really comes down to one possession. So I think that message has been received by this group loud and clear. But the message is only as good as the leadership of your team and what they do on a daily basis to help their teammates grow. And that's where Trey and Baylor and Ryan have been absolutely outstanding. And then, you know, Stephen Ashworth's come in and been a great leader as well. So, you know, we've got great leadership on this team, and that's a big reason that we're in the position we are today.
You know, you mentioned Baylor Shireman. We had a chance to talk to him last season, I believe, after he kind of arrived on campus. But we've noticed a difference in his game. First of all, he's bigger, he's stronger, and his shot has not decreased really in relevance. And he's risen not only on the floor as a defensive presence now, but certainly as a team leader, as you suggested. Where do you feel like he's improved the most in order to really make him a legitimate Player of the Year candidate in this league?
Yeah, you know, he went through the NBA process, draft process 2 years ago, and, you know, got a taste of that, and then just decided, you know, as soon as the season was over last year, that rather than put myself out there and go through that again, I have some things that I really, really want to improve on, and I want to get to work on those rather than traveling around the country working out for NBA teams. He went to work with our strength coach, Jeremy Anderson. He got in the gym, and he worked extremely hard on some mobility things. And to your point, he's really changed the dynamics of his body, and that's really helped him in every part of the game. But, you know, he does so much for our team. You know, his ability to see the floor, his leadership, obviously you alluded to his ability to make baskets. But the rebounding has been incredible. It was probably the one thing I questioned when he transferred from South Dakota State. How will that skill transfer from the Summit League to the Big East? And, you know, here you are, you get a, you know, 6'7" guard that's leading our league in rebounding, which is an incredible feat in itself.
I was just going to say that, Mac. I know what you told Baylor. Hey, can you rebound the ball? You can take as many threes as you want whenever you want, but you got to rebound. You got to help us rebound a little bit, which he certainly, hey, the combination now of him and Ryan, who has been, you know, a consistent good rebounder and obviously one of the better defensive players in the country. How does that give your team a different look?
You know, oftentimes there's a lot of good centers in our league, and, you know, a lot of times Kalkbrenner's just fighting his life off, you know, fighting his tail off to keep that other guy off the glass. And Baylor's just one of those guys that's got an incredible nose for the basketball. He reads it off the rim really well, and then he really pursues it, and he attacks the basketball. And the additional strength from a year ago has helped him immensely in being able to finish off some of those rebounds in traffic against really good players in our conference. So having those two guys back there, Trey's improved his rebounding this year. And, you know, we lost obviously a good, really good rebounder in Arthur Kaluma. And, you know, it's been done by committee kind of at that four spot for us.
You know, we've talked about several players already, and you just mentioned the one that really might be my favorite player to watch, and that's Trey Alexander, Coach, because to me, Alexander, with his ability to be able to drive, to be able to slice, to get to the rim, to pull up and shoot the jumper, to make a defensive play when you need it, he might be as pro-ready as anybody. I'm not trying to rush him out the door for you. Trust me here on this one. But I'm telling you, I think he's a fun guy to watch. Is he as much fun to teach as it looks like he is?
He's been an absolute pleasure to coach. And, you know, when you have guys go through that NBA process, they get a lot of information. What they do with that information is up to each individual. And in Trey's case and Ryan Kalkbrenner both, when they both decided to come back, they were really hungry to improve and develop their game. And Trey wanted to have the ball in his hands a little bit more this year to be able to show his ability to facilitate. Obviously, we've done that for him, and it's paid off huge dividends for our team because he makes such good decisions with the basketball. And people forget, last year he led the Big East play only. He led the league in three-point shooting. Three-point shooting has continued in practice at a very high level. He just hasn't shot it quite as well in games. But his mid-range, his ability to get to the rim and then make plays for himself and his teammates has been, you know, next-level good. So I think he's got a long career ahead in the NBA, and it, you know, if it turns out to be after this year, we'll wish him the best and support him regardless of what he does.
Greg, an awful lot of issues around the sport right now. Just want to ask you about a couple. And if you want to take a pass on this one, that's fine, because I'm sure you're worried more about Villanova than anything else. But the net and getting teams in the tournament. I think we all agree that the Big East has been one of the better conferences in the country. There's a slew of teams, quote, on the bubble. They may not be on the bubble, you know, eventually, or, you know, on Selection Sunday. But right now, there seems to be yourself, obviously, Connecticut and Marquette are safe. Everyone else is grouped in with, you know, that core in at the line of 68. Scheduling has become a really big thing. The Big 12's caught some flack of their weak non-conference scheduling. You have always been aggressive this year, you know, Iowa and Nebraska and UNLV and Alabama. I'm curious where you take with the net. Where are you with the net? We've used it now for whatever it is, 4, 5, 6 years, and it seems to be getting an awful lot of criticism this season.
I think the net is more about sorting and not so much about selection. And I think people get lost in that. The committee is made up of smart basketball people, and you know, they're going to evaluate your non-conference schedule. Who did you play that you had to play, and what games did you take that maybe you didn't have to take, but you took to challenge yourself? I've always fallen into the philosophy that if I think I have a good team, I think it's better for our conference and better for our program to challenge myself. If I'm building or rebuilding, then maybe it's better for our league and better for my individual program to play a weaker schedule, to rack up some wins, to get guys some experience as you try to build your team for January and February. And, you know, we've had good teams the last couple of years. So we went and played at UNLV. We started a home and home with Alabama. There's a lot of teams that are playing one-off neutral site games across the country, but not many doing as many home and homes as there used to be. And, you know, frankly, we like that. It was a great Saturday in December to have Alabama come here. It looks like they're going to be one of the teams at the top of the SEC. So anytime you can play those games and you have a good team, I think it's great for you. But, you know, I hope at the end of the day, the strength of the Big East, you know, is heard loud and clear in that committee room. And, you know, we've got a lot of deserving teams that I think deserve to be in the tournament. And not only do they deserve to be in the tournament, they can win some games when they get there.
Coach, I got one more for you around this season overall. But, you know, with all of the superlatives that you guys have put out on the floor, I'm just kind of wondering, of the teams and the individuals that you have faced, has there been one that has been most difficult to prepare for?
I mean, everybody in this league, you know, there's such good coaching in this league. And sometimes it's about matchups. And, you know, for whatever reason, we've defended UConn pretty well twice.
Right.
They kicked our tail in stores. But, you know, every team in our league is unique. And every team, because of that, is challenging to prepare for. I think the defense in our league, the offensive rebounding numbers, as you start to look at our conference, I mean, I think we have 5 or 6 teams in the top 30 in the country in offensive rebounding percentage. So the physicality of our league, I think, makes it challenging, especially for, you know, a team like us that's largely built on skill. We've recruited a bunch of skilled guys, and we've tried to make them a little stronger and a little bit tougher. You know, everybody presents their own challenge. What I think that's going to do, I think it's going to make for a very exciting tournament in New York City next week.
You like your chances to get to the final?
Yeah, I mean, we've been there 4 times. We haven't won the darn thing. So I'd like to think we could knock that door down at some point. But you're just going to have so many games that are going to have an NCAA tournament feel, because, you know, you're going to have some games on Thursday and even a couple on Wednesday night where, you know, those teams have to win, and you're going to could very well have 2 teams on the NCAA tournament bubble playing each other on Thursday, and it's going to have a great feel in the Garden. But, you know, anything can happen in the Garden. I think we've seen that. I've only been in the league now 10 or 11 years, but, you know, there's been a lot of unexpected things that have happened at the Big East tournament. And I think this year with the balance of our league, you know, Georgetown's rebuilding and DePaul's obviously went through a coaching change, but the other 9 teams on any given night, anything can happen. And I'm pretty sure you're going to see some of that in New York next week.
That's Creighton head coach Greg McDermott, whose team pushed its way back into a national top 10 status this week and a likely national contender. Coming up next, who's hot? And we'll have a blast from the Big East past next. This Week in the Big East.
Coming up, who's hot? This Week in the Big East. Who's hot?
Richmond whips it on his right for Davis. He starts the drive. He runs into traffic, kicks it out. Richmond wide open for a 3. It's good! Kadari Richmond with his 2nd 3-pointer of the night. He's got 14, and Seton Hall has their largest lead. The ball intercepted. Newt, breakout, Castle, and he windmilled it down! Oh, man! Jays will have to space this one out. Shireman deep 3. He's got it! Shireman!
Thielman, 4 feet behind the arc, rings the three. Creighton by 16.
Welcome back to This Week in the Big East. John Rook and Kevin McNamara. Player of the week, Baylor Shireman from Creighton. 23 points, 13.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 2.5 steals. And he probably sold a dozen or more hot dogs in the stands for Creighton last week, don't you think?
Yeah, not quite sure what Baylor's pro prospects will be, but and I think they'll be good. But his college career, John, you're looking at one of the all-time great collegians because of what he's done in his long and productive college career.
He's one of 11 collegians all-time that has scored 1,000 career points at two different schools. Freshman of the week, it's a broken record, but Stephon Castle from UConn wins the award for a record-tying 10th time this season. The only other player in Big East history to win it 10 times, some guy named Carmelo Anthony, Kev.
That'll work. You want to be in that category. Carmelo Anthony, Steph Castle. Steph Castle, he should hear his name next week in the all Big East. Maybe not first team, but no question he's one of the top 10 or 15 players in the league.
Here's some great names on the honor roll again this week. Donovan Klingon from UConn, Cam Jones, Marquette, Glenn Taylor from St. John's had a really good week, 17 points, including 5 threes and a win against Butler, Justin Moore, Villanova, Desmond Claude, Xavier, all great players at one time or another this year.
Looking forward to seeing all of them at Madison Square Garden.
Our blast from the past this week makes up the short trip returning back to 2011, just 13 years ago this coming week, for one of the most remarkable runs ever witnessed in Big East and college basketball postseason history.
Walker with 7.
Got a mismatch.
Walker on McGee with 4. Kemba Walker. Step back. Walker. Cardiac Kemba does it again. UConn wins at the buzzer.
Cardiac Kemba Walker led his UConn Huskies through a remarkable 5 straight wins in 5 days, 4 against nationally ranked teams to claim the Big East Tournament Championship as a 9 seed in 2011. He scored 130 points in those 5 games. That feat was followed by another 6-game win streak through the NCAA Tournament to win the program's 3rd national championship, and they beat future Big East rival Butler in the title game. And this was after finishing again 9-9, Kevin, in the Big East regular season. A storybook year? Fairy tale? Pure fantasy? What was it?
Hey, if I'm, you know, Xavier or Butler, maybe two teams that probably have to win the Big East tournament to make the NCAA tournament, I'm showing my team Kemba Walker back in that season because it is possible.
And it happened, believe it or not, again, just 13 years ago this coming week. And while Walker was that kind of guy for UConn a bit more than the decade ago, could we see similar performances from present-day players trying to lead their teams, as Kevin said, through the postseason? One such guy could be Providence's Devin Carter. He can disrupt a game defensively. He can light it up on offense at the same time. Carter, a major factor for the Friars' run toward March Madness, and he joins us next. This Week in the Big East.
Coming up next, the Big East Focus. Big East Focus.
Off the iron, Oduro gets the rebound. Here's Carter on the left wing in front of his head coach, Kim English. Stops, looks, slides to the left, fires off the deep three. Yes!
I can't believe that shot right in front of us. That's an amazing shot. That was great defense by Alexander.
Welcome back to This Week in the Big East. You know, every team that hopes to play deep into the postseason needs a catalyst, a reliable leader that when you need it most, he gets you that bucket or maybe even that big stop on defense. And if you have a guy that can do both of those equally well, you might have yourself someone who could be player of the year special. Providence's Devin Carter is one of a very few players in the Big East that opposing coaches need to game plan for, or they'll likely find those game plans in the garbage can. Carter joins us this week in the Big East. Now, Dev, you showed you were already one of the league's best defenders a year ago when you first got to Providence. I wonder if you could take us through what you worked on a little to pick up your offensive game to match this season.
I mean, I spent every summer, I spent a lot of time in the gym. I think I got a lot of game shots this summer. I just think that is more so like of a confidence thing, that jump from like my freshman year to now. Yeah, I just think that, you know, playing under Cammy puts a lot of confidence in the players, me especially. I mean, I feel like I've watched a lot of film. I see where my shots are going to come from. So I just know, like, you know, the shots that I do take, it's shots that I work on. And it's not, like, out of the ordinary for me to shoot those deep shots or anything because those are shots that I actually work on. So
right. And the one thing that I've noticed, though, at least compared to a year ago, is that your confidence, and I know you alluded to that for just a second, but your confidence is sky higher than it was a year ago. What helped you develop that confidence in the offseason?
I mean, just coming into the gym every day, ready to work. like I said, getting a lot of shots, seeing the ball go through the basket, you know, game speed, so I could get a feel for how it would be in the game. Like I said, I mean, all the coaches we've watched film, they first thing they said whenever they came here was, you know, I'm not a 29% three-point shooter. I mean, just off the bat, they've always known, you know, what I'm capable of. They've just done a good job of, you know, keeping my confidence high to, you know, shoot shots along with my teammates.
Yeah, that three-point shooting percentage has skyrocketed, and that's just hard work more than anything else. Devin, how about that leadership role? You know, you shared it with Bryce and a few of the other guys last year in your first year at Providence, but this year, especially after Bryce's injury, it is on your shoulders. How have you welcomed that, and has that changed your game at all?
Losing Bryce obviously was big, you know, not just everything he does on the court, but everything he does as a leader as well. I mean, I think Ticket, Josh, you know, the older guys on the team, the seniors, they've done a great job of, you know, being leaders as well this year. And if it wasn't for them, you know, I'd struggle. So, I mean, you know, not everybody's a perfect human. So, you know, everybody might get upset or get frustrated sometimes. But us three being the older guys on the team, we're able to, you know, snap each other out of it, bring us back to, you know, the mission that we have to accomplish, which is winning the game. And glad we could do that, you know, with the rest of our team as well. You know, if anybody's frustrated or anything, we can snap them out of it. You know, we can focus on winning the game at that point. So,
yeah, your key word there, I think, being focus. You guys do seem to have the ability, and I guess this comes from having the experience on the floor, but your ability to focus has got to be part of the reason why you've had some success.
Yeah. You know, late games, I think we've done a pretty good job of playing in close games. I don't know what the actual record is, but, you know, I feel like we have a older group on the team, on the court for the most part, with three of us, you know, being juniors or seniors, or post-grads, actually. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, you know, Jane, sophomore, and Rich, a freshman. But, you know, being a sophomore and being a freshman on a team where, you know, you got three other guys on the court who are looking out after you and are trying to, you know, keep your spirits and just keep your level of like intensity up. You know, I feel like we're trying to make it better for them, their experience, you know, being younger. So by the time they're, you know, a junior or senior, they can pull a freshman or sophomore up with them as well. So, you know, they do a great job though by themselves already. So, you know, they make it our job a lot easier than what it really is.
Hey, Devin, John and I have covered a lot of Providence guys the last, well, long time. for just being here for 2 years, I can kind of sense among the fans that you are a true fan favorite. Do you feel that? And how exciting is that on home games before, you know, the Friars play their last home game of the season on Saturday night against Connecticut?
Credit to God for putting me in this situation. You know, I didn't know where I was going to go in the transfer portal. You know, if it wasn't for Cooley, you know, I definitely would never be here. So credit to Cooley as well for bringing me here. But the fans and the organization, the community, like the facility, there's definitely a lot of reasons why I didn't transfer. Like a lot of people say, oh, he didn't transfer because he couldn't transfer. He'd have to sit out. No, I don't think that's true. Like if I wanted to leave, if I wanted to transfer, start over, I could have, you know, I don't feel like it's too hard to get a waiver or anything. So it definitely wasn't that. I think that I know I wanted to stay, and I know how much I wanted to play for these fans for possibly another 2 years. So, I mean, it's just been great for how they've open-armed welcomed me and how they've treated me since day one. So
how much of an influence, and for those that don't know, your dad obviously is a longtime NBA player, is a current NBA assistant coach in Memphis. How much has your dad's influence played a factor in how you deal with these decisions, whether to stay, to go, to train, to improve? You hung around an NBA, you know, player for most of your life here, Devin. So just wondering how much influence he has over how you make your decisions.
He always tells me it's my decision. Once I turned 18, you know, I'm old enough to know what I'm doing and everything. So he, ever since then, just always let me decide, and he just goes with it. But he always tells me, like you can't be one of the people who, when something gets tough, you quit or you leave or you want to start over or anything. You know, you got to stay through a fight if it gets tough or anything. That's what builds, you know, character. That's what builds who you are. So
Yeah, unlike other parents, I think Anthony Carter gives the real deal, and Devin has benefited from that. Hey, Devin, we always asked some of our player interviews this. In your short time in the Big East, maybe the top couple guys you've had to go against, and besides Providence, where do you enjoy playing?
By the way, Devin, when we ask them this question, your name usually comes up.
It pops up a few times.
I'd say Baylor, Sherman. He's definitely probably, people ask me, I usually say him just because, I mean, I feel like he plays the game with a high IQ. He knows where he's going to get his shots and he doesn't get rushed. So, I mean, it's always hard to guard somebody who doesn't get rushed and know how to come off screens and know where he's going to get his shots from. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably say him. That's probably the only person who I feel like is tough for me to guard, but or a challenge. But
sure, he's got a little size on you too, right?
Yeah. Definitely like 6'6", so he's a little taller as well. So every time we match up, it's always a good battle regardless. But he's definitely a good matchup. So, same with Trey Alexander. I feel like he, you know, not a lot of people shoot mid-ranges, but that's where he's like specializes in. So, I mean, coming off ball screens and snaking and shooting off the backboard and faders in the mid-range are always hard to guard, no matter how good of a defender you are. So I'd say those two. And funny thing is, they're on the same team. So,
Right. Well, that's a good team. And how about places you like to play that you've enjoyed going to besides your own home floor?
I like playing at DePaul for some reason. I mean, I feel like I just always play good at DePaul. My four games that I played there, I don't know what my averages are, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, my two games that I played there, I think that, that's a good gym, good shooting gym. And then, obviously, all the NBA arenas, you know, it's great to get experience playing there. So I like playing in the NBA arenas as well.
That's Providence junior guard Devin Carter, who finds himself in a tight battle for the Big East scoring title this year with Xavier's Quincy Oliveri going into the weekend. Now, Carter has a 25-point lead with each still having a game to play. And if Carter holds on, he'll become the eighth Friar all-time to win a Big East scoring crown. Happy or unhappy with your team's play of late? Regardless of where you fall on that, it's the job of Commissioner Val Ackerman to ensure the season runs smoothly enough to give your team its best shot. The commish joins us next. This week in the Big East.
Coming up next, the National Perspective. The National Perspective.
Backsway dips to Spencer for three. Bang! How about that one? And Spencer pumps his fist and Shaheen Holloway's got to call a timeout. 65-43 UConn.
Welcome back to This Week in the Big East. Every college basketball season has its surprises, both good and bad, and its struggles on and off the floor. But one constant remains. There are few moments in a season that compare to Big East teams facing each other at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden in New York. You know, it's how these teams and players start the year with Media Day and how they end it playing for a championship. Big East Commissioner Val Ackerman joined us kind of for a state of the league, if you will. We're wondering, Val, what were you most pleased really to kind of discover about the competition this season? What's kind of left a lasting impression on your mind?
Well, first, great to be with you all. It's a highlight of the year, not just trying to suck up here. Great being with the two of you this moment every year to talk about the season and what's ahead. And as you know, noted, John, right around the corner is our big event, Big East Tournament. I believe it's the 42nd year. And it's our hope we're going to be there for many years to come. Never disappoints in terms of the quality of play, the intensity of the competition, the crowds. In terms of, you know, what's led up to this, you know, it's sort of interesting. We're almost like it's a tale of two leagues this year. We've got a few teams at the very top of college basketball, notably the Huskies, who have kind of come back to the Big East with a vengeance. Coach Hurley's done an incredible job. You know, I'm not surprised. You asked about surprise. I'm not surprised that they've come back strong this year after the national championship last year. The fact that they've done it so forcefully and so dominantly in Big East play, I guess, was eye-opening. So that to me is sort of piece one. Creighton and Marquette have done an outstanding job keeping their programs at a high level. And then we've got a bunch of schools as we head into the Big East tournament who are sort of fighting for a NCAA tournament berth. And I'm hoping we can get as many of those, that cluster of schools, in as we possibly can. Providence has done an amazing job under a new coach. Coach Pitino has done a wonderful job beginning the rebuilding of St. John's. Seton Hall under Coach Holloway just keeps producing great finishes. So I could go on and on here and crow about the great work that our coaches are doing. But at the end of the day, I think the punchline is we're going to have another great finish in the Big East, and hopefully we'll be in a great position to do some really good things in the NCAA tournament.
Val, obviously all Big East fans want to see as many Big East teams in the NCAA tournament as possible. Can you maybe take people behind the scenes on how you guys, I wouldn't say politic, I know that the selection committee has a representative for the Big East. I'm sure Dan Leibovitz and yourself may be in contact with that person. How does that work where you seemingly have so many teams, quote, on the bubble?
The way it's structured is every conference is assigned two people from the committee as monitors. Every conference has, over the course of the season, four phone calls with their monitors. You get your chance at that moment to present your case. And so we have a great effort, in that regard. We provide a lot of data to the monitors. We walk them through. We actually had a call this week, which will be our nearly last call before they go into their bunker,
right,
and start deliberating. And that's really how it works. And that's how you get your chance to talk up, the best case for your teams. I think for the Big East, we're going to be in very good shape this year. I'm hoping it's somewhere between 5 and 7 teams that we can get in, depending on how the chips fall. And it's certainly, it's not just based on the performance of our teams, but it also, there's a domino effect here. If schools and other conferences do very well or very poorly, that could have an impact on the teams that we get in.
Val, I'm very curious about this aspect of it, though. Do you get feedback from them that you can actually share with your coaches and your administrators at the schools in order for them to try to set up their schedules to the best possible ability of getting into the tournament?
Having Barry Collier in the room, and before him, Bruce Rasmussen, the AD at Creighton, was our representative in the committee. And so when you've got somebody in the room that can then share with our other ADs and coaches in particular, what's going through the committee's minds, kinds of things you think are important. Yes, so we do get that kind of feedback. I will tell you, the net, which is that that ranking system now that takes into account a lot of variables, has become important. It's not the only factor and piece of data that the committee looks at, but it is an important one. So if you've got a net, which is a ranking number between 1 and 360, and it's below 50, I'd say, you're in decent shape to get into the tournament as an at-large. There are other factors. Quality of scheduling is critically important. Strength of non-conference play is critically important. How you do against really good teams in non-conference play is really, really important. So that's why those early season games, particularly those multi-team exempt tournaments in far-flung places where you get to play other high major teams, if you win a few of those, that can really set the foundation for a good decision on your team come March.
Val, I wanted to ask you a macro question away from basketball. Well, away from this season anyways. The transfer portal. The transfer portal opens up literally the day after Selection Sunday. Why? I have no idea. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. I think it distracts from the tournament, the NCAA tournament. That's A. And B, what do you tell, you're in some national level meetings. What do you tell your coaches about where that transfer portal might be going? Because, boy, it's so important to the roster building of basically all of your teams.
Well, let me take the second piece first, Kevin. You're right. I mean, it has become increasingly important in terms of roster development for our teams. I mean, I think it's going to end up having actually a significant impact on high school recruiting. We're beginning to see that those veteran returning collegiate players, particularly those that had a successful prior year, might be more attractive to a program than an unproven high school kid. It's certainly, if you look at our teams, and you all follow our teams closely, look at all the teams we have where we have, many, many new players. So that is a real trend. In answer to your question, I agree with you 1,000%. I do not understand why the transfer portal starts the day after Selection Sunday. I think it's preposterous. We have made that point in meetings. We're not the only conference that gets to vote on that. Our view is that it should start after the Final Four. So you get through the season and then everybody starts at the same time. Right now, we're seeing teams that don't qualify for the tournament getting a jump on transfer activity because they don't have to focus on the NCAA tournament. I think that's a terrible idea. And we have made that point in meetings. You know, I can't explain sometimes the NCAA decision-making process, to be honest. They did cut down the number of days. It used to be a 60-day window. Now it's 45. In my ideal world, it would start after the season ends, or maybe the final eight weekend, regional finals weekend, Elite Eight weekend. And so at that point, you've only got a few teams left, and then maybe go 30 days instead of 45 or 60. And I think it could change. I think if there's a little more history around this and a little more sense of passion around this point, I think it's possible it would change. But going into this year, the rule is as you stated it was.
How likely is it, number one, that we get this change? And number two, how likely is it, do you think, that in the next few years we'll see an increase in teams in the NCAA tournament?
I think it's possible. I couldn't say likely, John, on the transfer portal change. I think it's possible. There is a sense that we just have to see how this plays out over another season, say. But again, I you know, my views on it are pretty strong. And certainly to the extent we get a voice in that, we'll make that point. In answer to your second question, I also think it's possible that the NCAA tournament could be expanded. I don't think there's any appetite for a large-scale expansion. I mean, the meetings I've been part of, the notion has been either leave it alone because it's really, really good and it doesn't need to be fiddled with, or undertake a modest expansion where maybe it goes up by 4 to 8 teams. We're sort of landlocked here on the dates. The networks don't want to go later than the weekend where it currently ends, in part because CBS doesn't want to spill into the following weekend because they've got the Masters golf tournament. So you've got to, you know, we think maintain the integrity of that existing window. And you can only do so much within that window from a competitive standpoint in terms of adding a round or games, et cetera. That seems to be the prevailing view right now, that if it's going to happen, it would be modest. And certainly if it does happen, I would hope that that's advantageous to the Big East. Sure. Because, you know, we're going to have bubble teams probably every year, and a few more teams in would mean a greater likelihood that more Big East teams would have a chance to play in the big dance.
Some interesting insight from Big East Commissioner Val Ackerman. Now, who's got next? It'll all take place on the Madison Square Garden floor. We're going to run down the schedule for you coming up this week in the Big East.
Coming up, who's got next? This week in the Big East. Who's got next? This week in the Big East.
And the ball stripped away into the hands of Jenkins. Jenkins goes coast to coast, lays it up and in. Danish Jenkins puts the Red Storm ahead by 20.
John Rook, Kevin McNamara. This week in the Big East, we have regular season games to wrap up on Saturday, and everything has a little bit of an implication to it. Georgetown at St. John's. Johnnies still need to win to keep their seeding high and to keep their NCAA hopes alive. Creighton plays at Villanova. Marquette at Xavier. UConn at Providence. That's a huge one for the Friars. DePaul plays at Seton Hall, and Seton Hall doesn't want to take a step back if they can avoid it, Kev.
Yeah, I would say two jump out. You mentioned Providence, no question. I think the Friars win. That could lock a NCAA tournament bid for them. Villanova, if they want to lock anything heading into the Big East tournament, beat Creighton at home.
A reminder, of course, that the tournament starts Wednesday at the Garden with a 4 o'clock tip-off with the number 8 seed facing the number 9 seed, likely going to be Xavier Butler, even though nothing official, but Butler's definitely in that game. Then game two on Wednesday will feature at 6:30 p.m. the 7 seed against the 10 seed, and then the third game on the Wednesday opening night will start at 9 o'clock with the number 6 seeded team against number 11, and then, of course, quarterfinal Thursday in the Big East starts at 12 noon Eastern time with the 8-9 winner facing top-seeded UConn. And here we go, Kevin Mack.
Yeah, John, I love that the potential NCAA tournament team is playing Wednesday, which shows the depth of the league. And as far as Thursday, I don't know if there'll be any knockout NCAA tournament games, but you better win.
Hey, our thanks this week to Creighton's Greg McDermott, Providence's Devin Carter, and Big East Commissioner Val Ackerman for joining us. Thanks to all of our flagship radio stations for the calls you hear on the show, to Learfield, Fox, and ESPN for their use. Thanks to producer Kevin Collins, our executive producers John Paquette, Scott Hecht, Kevin Ivany at the Big East. Thank you to the coaches and administrators at all 11 Big East member institutions. They've made themselves available to us and, of course, to you. For Kevin McNamara, I'm John Rook. Find us on X at JR Broadcaster, at Kevin McNamara 33. And we will join you next week from the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden in New York, for This Week in the Big East.
Thanks for listening to This Week in the Big East. Special thanks to our member schools as well as their athletic departments. This Week in the Big East is produced by Kevin Collins. Be sure to join us next week for the latest edition of This Week in the Big East.